I was in the infirmary for a week. I got visits from McCoy, Ramirez, and Molly. Mouse stayed at my bedside and no one tried to move him. Listens to Wind was a regular presence, since he was pretty much my doctor. Several of the young wardens I'd helped train stopped by to have a word, though all of them were looking nervous. Anastasia never visited, though Listens to Wind said she had come by and asked after me when I was asleep. The gatekeeper came to see me in the middle of the night. When I woke up, he had already created a kind of sonic shield around us that made sure we were speaking in privacy. It made our voices sound like our heads were covered with large tin pails.
"How are you feeling?" he asked quietly.
I gestured at my face, which was no longer bandaged. As Listens to Wind had promised, my eye was fine. I had two beautiful scars, though, one running down through my right eyebrow, skipping my eye, and continuing for an inch or so on my cheekbone, and another one that went squarely through the middle of my lower lip and on a slight angle down over my chin.
"Like Herr Harrison von Ford," I said, "dueling scars and beauty marks. The girls will be lining up now."
The quip didn't make him smile. He looked down at his hands, his expression serious.
"I've been working with the wardens and administrative staff whose minds Peabody invaded."
I heard.
"It appears," he said, choosing his words carefully, "that the psychic disruption to Anastasia Lucio was particularly severe. I was wondering if you might have any theories that might explain it."
I stared across the darkened room quietly for a moment, then asked, "Did the Merlin send you?"
"I am the only one who knows," he said seriously, "or who will know."
I thought about it for a moment before I said, "Would my theory make any difference in how she gets treated?"
"Potentially. If it seems sound, it might give me the insight I need to heal her more quickly and safely."
"Give me your word," I said. I wasn't asking.
"You have it."
"Before he died," I said, "Morgan told me that when he woke up in Lafortier's room, Lucio was holding the murder weapon." I described the rest of what Morgan had told me of that night. The gatekeeper stared across the bed at the far wall, his face impassive.
"He was trying to protect her.
I guess he figured the council might do some wacky thing like sentencing an innocent person to death." He closed his eyes for a moment and then touched the fingertips of his right hand to his heart, his mouth, and his forehead.
"It explains some things."
"Like what?" He held up his hand.
"In a moment. I told you that the damage to Anastasia was quite extensive, not because she had been persuaded to do violence. That much came easily to her. I believe her emotional attitudes had been forcibly altered."
"Emotional attitudes," I said quietly.
"You mean her and me?"
"Yes."
"Because she always believed in keeping her distance," I said quietly, "until recently."
"Yes," he said.
"She never cared about me."
He shrugged his shoulders.
"There had to have been some kind of foundation upon which to build. It's entirely possible that she genuinely felt fond of you, and that something might have grown from it, but it was forced into place instead."
"Who would do that?" I shook my head.
"No, that's obvious. Why would he do that?"
"To keep tabs on you, perhaps," the gatekeeper replied. "Perhaps to have an asset in position to remove you if it became necessary.
You were, after all, virtually the only younger warden who never gave Peabody an opportunity to exploit you, since you never came to headquarters. You're also probably the most talented and powerful of your generation. The other young wardens like to associate with you generally, so there was every chance you might notice something amiss. Taken as a whole, you were a threat to him."
I felt a little sick. That's why she showed up in Chicago when she should have been back at headquarters helping with the manhunt.
"Almost certainly," he said.